that one of the tools that we possess as Western sages is the Kabbalah, with deep roots in the Jewish world out of which Yeshua came, Jesus came. So I want to work on that this afternoon. Before we do, though, I want us to reflect on these three things and spend a little bit of time on the third. And that is that if inside of us a new kind of awareness or attention or consciousness begins to form, then that is catalytic. It has effect this way. And whether or not we know it, the kind of consciousness that's anointed with higher energy, higher form, has a resonant effect upon the environment. So we leave that. It comes because there's an alignment. So a sage, by definition, is aligned along multiple axes and can be nimble to work between them. So we're learning how to do that. This afternoon's work, the Kabbalah, is about how to understand and draw down energies from the vertical axis. That's what it's about. The third area is to think of sapience or wisdom in this way. Darren, who is Ron and Karen's wonderful son, creates prosthetics of various kinds, and that's his area of expertise. And he's a marvelous technician. He's a wonderful person in his own right. But he has this passion for helping a person become whole. So he works with surgeons who work with cranial abnormalities, and then he builds the prosthetics to help the child grow into a more normal and whole being. Let's imagine that that is just a huge gift of modern science. It is. Okay. Imagine that a person, let's just take somebody that doesn't have an arm, and Darren builds a prosthetic that will allow a person to grasp with fingers and so forth. Oh, what a marvelous thing. And that's the gift of our world. We're all involved in it in some way. We're involved in making those gifts happen. They're gifts to the world. Imagine that that child, though, is dying of cancer. So you've got the prosthetic that gives that person maneuverability in the world that he or she needs using this wonderful instrument or prosthetic. That's technology. But wonder if the patient's dying. That's the work of wisdom. To bring wholeness to the person that needs this prosthetic. There's two different things here. So that the being of humanity is in peril and it's missing some limbs. So think about those two. Think about saging being the gift that is given through to restore wholeness of being. It's a gift that isn't like the prosthetic. It's hard to see. The prosthetic, you can see. You can see, okay, this added a whole new dimension to this person's life, this technology. So we rely on external technology to fix the world. The world cannot be fixed with technology. Humankind cannot be fixed with technology. Better iPhones will not fix the world. So the work of a sapiential work is how to restore health to the patient who obviously can benefit from the technology. Two things going on here. So you say, well, am I a technician? Yes. Not a prosthetics. Although that may be part of your work. But your work, my work, is to be aware of this, the condition, the whole condition, the inner condition, the health, the well-being of the patient, of the human. And we, in the way we work with the world, can bring this other element of well-being, adjustment, integration, wholeness, and movement towards the completion of a human being. So can you see the difference between those two? And that's, I think, the difference that we're having to talk about. So the problem is not external, the problem is internal, and the only thing that can actually address the internal condition of humanity is wisdom or sapience. That's why it's absolutely critical to have wise beings in the world. Without them, the patient is dying, even though we've got the best technology to, you know, shore up missing parts and pieces. A couple months ago, I needed a little bit of that technology myself, and I feel much better. But it's, you know, the whole being is what has to be addressed. So, what is the work of a sage? Yes.
Wonderful Dr. Malden, a chiropractor that's gone to his great reward, would say, if you need a muffler, you go to Midas.
Yeah. Yeah, good. Don't come to me.
And, there's a place for those things. Yeah. And then if you need something else,
that's right. Yeah, precisely. So we say, well, I don't have anything to give to the world. Oh, that's just the absolutely the wrong end of the stick. No. What you have is what the world needs. Desperately. Desperately to give meaning to the dying patient. The question is, what does begin to fix this inner condition? And it's surprising to me. It's surprising. And I said this a couple of weeks ago at our order gathering. I was a fundamentalist, a rabid fundamentalist at one point. And you know what got me out of it? Beauty.
What, beauty?
Beauty. Not argument. Something more beautiful trumped that point of view. And it was beauty that trumped it. So, the gift of beauty, the gift of fragrance, the gift of a kind of resonance, that is something that we tend not to pay attention to. But I've been trying to build, and we did work on some of these at a certain point when we were several times ago, to try to understand what is beautiful and try to understand what it is that will be required of each of us as we go forward as wisdom teachers, as wisdom beings. So we've talked about this wisdom gift in terms of teaching, healing, warrioring, which I'm going to change to strong leadership, and vision, artistic and creative vision, visionary, beauty. And I'm saying to you that I think it was the visionary that trumped my fundamentalism. And part of it was teaching, some of it was healing, definitely there were leaders in that showed up in my life, but it was vision and beauty and creative understanding that helped. So I've created a kind of map for myself to understand the elements that make me effective. This is my personal map. That's my mantra. And I put that together a number of years ago, and I'm not going to try to go through it all, but you can see that it's a flat map of a three-dimensional piece, but there's the four directions, there are the other two, there is at the heart of it this image of the six, and there are multiple areas around it that support it and give it, to give my life meaning. My map will not necessarily be good for you, but it might be a stimulus for you to understand. So just quickly, this outer one is Sophia Perennis. This brown one here for me is the Abrahamic Absarian tradition, of which Judaism, Islam, and Christianity are part. The round circle is the central teachings of Yeshua, and the way I understand him and interpret him is this, and then I've got the center of it as those are things that I can draw on that keep me balanced, that keep me healthy. This is the meaning that feeds my own soul. So I want you to, don't look at that, you can look at it, but you know, it's mine and not necessarily the way that you will express it. But I want you to start right now with this thought, the work of a sage. What wisdom do I know that I can take to the bank? It's genuine gold. And this is amorphous, it seems too big of a question. But what could I take to the bank that I could slap down and say, this will not devalue. This is absolutely vital. I wish every human being knew this. And when I say it, or when I describe it, or when I demonstrate it, it is powerfully effective. When I live it, it's powerfully effective. What can I take to the bank? Or another way of saying it, what will make it possible to live on this earth with value and meaning and a better life? While you're here, what do you give? Write one thing down this minute, and I didn't give you any prep to do this, and it might take 2 or 3 days to even to put your first one down. But every one of you are carrying that treasure. Every one of you know this. You have that first thing. You said, all right, I'll bank on this. I can bank on this. So, just to give you an idea, but I'm banking on this. I wish every human being on the planet knew this. That Earth experience is a veil of soul making. Period. That's a wisdom principle that I'm absolutely convinced of. It keeps me balanced through the turmoil of life. But there are multitudes of them. Question is, what are you carrying that you know? Karen is lovely.
It is, my dear.
It is. Karen made this talking stick. We made it on the fly. And it's just gorgeous.
I don't remember making it.
Maybe you didn't. I think you did. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Somebody take the talking stick and tell us the one thing that you're banking on. The wisdom principle.
I'll take it.
Okay, Jen, you go ahead. And then you pass it to her. We'll just pass it to her.
It is quite lovely.
Oh, it's perfect.
The thing that I bank on is that there is good in every single human being, even though we don't see it. But there is.
I completely
a little
agree.
Tiny morsel. Even Trump.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you kicked his ass a little bit, you might some of that gold might be shaken loose. Yes.
What I carry and what I try to gift others with is the knowing that we will all be gathered in. No thing will be left, no being will be left.
Absolutely. Behind. Okay. So nothing will be lost. Nothing will be wasted.
Right.
Every being is precious.
Right.
Absolutely.
I jot it down quickly. I don't know if this is. I put down the experience of suffering. I'm quoting Pema and awareness, but my own experience of suffering actually being the medicine for what I needed.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. You can take that to the bank.
Would you say that again, Ron?
The experience of suffering actually being the medicine I needed.
A phrase that's been with me for years, and I think about it every day. The Spirit of God is in every living thing, and when I recognize it, it wakes up in me.
Perfect. Perfect. Catherine.
What I carry with me is that on a deeper level, there is no separation.
There you go.
Going back to Sally.
What I first came to mind was that knowing that I'm deeply connected to spirit and that that spirit is actively teaching me. Those are
Actively. Working hard on your behalf day and night. Okay.
Okay.
I would say that the awareness of the power of unconditional love.
Absolute dynamite. Unconditional love is absolute dynamite. Absolute dynamite. Nothing can withstand it.
The power of listening.
Good.
My feet are planted deep in the earth.
And when you say that, explain what that means.
Say it again.
My feet are planted deep in the earth.
You've got muddy feet.
All the time.
And if somebody said, I want to plant my feet, what would you say? My feet aren't planted in the earth.
No, you just go out there and you get them in that earth. Mm-hmm. And then you experience the
Okay. So you're going almost from a literal to a spiritual level. So earth itself is a carrier of spirit.
Right.
You're going to experience something more than muddy feet.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, it's a part of my psyche and it's my responsibility.
Good. Becky? Spoken, beautiful. Is that going to you?
No, but I'll take it. Within the context that all shall be well, everything matters and nothing matters.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Oh, me. Everything matters and nothing matters. That is one of the greatest of all paradoxes. Everything matters. Nothing matters. Hold those together.
Peace on earth begins with me.
Peace on earth begins with Nancy. Boy, that is the truth.
This world is not my home. I'm just a stranger here.
So, would you use the word exile, you're in exile? Would that metaphor work for you?
In a way. Not entirely.
Yeah. So somebody, and this is comes and goes, this experience comes and goes, for me even. What am I doing here? And every once in a while I go, when it's IRS time, I'm getting a little sick of this. I'm just done with this. So that's an exile feeling. You know,
What? Okay, but let's hear it for Flatland. Flatland's required to do the work that I need to do.
Okay, so there's your, there's everything matters, nothing matters. This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through, and I'm here on this earth because it's absolutely vital. You know, it's my, it, in a certain way, it is my home. But it's not my home. It is my home, it's not my home. Interesting. I don't know if it goes to you. By the way, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Sorry to bring that up again.
I so appreciate it.
Yeah, I knew you would.
I feel like I'm recapitulating, but that we're all connected and pretty much always have been. And, you know, if it wasn't for my work, I would cubbyhole myself in such limited experience of others. But high and low, rich and poor, educated, gifted, bereft, everybody comes in to the office, right? And I get to meet them one-on-one. And it's been very challenging because I used to think I knew my patients. I had this great breadth of knowledge about them. And I, you know, it was terribly shocking to me to find out I didn't really know them. In this one place where we're meeting, I maybe have a great depth of knowledge, but it's very short. It doesn't have breadth. But so, you know, getting to live out that I in my office, I can love people that I would probably avoid otherwise. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful. And if you believe in all, as above, so below, connection, which could be translated so many different ways, even from our very beginning, the very first thing our embodied form grows with trouble to create is a connector that grows up, that evolves into the spinal cord, and it's the thing that connects everything else in your body to each other through the connector. So that's that. That's the metaphor for me, and I've already heard, you know, it said by others in so many other beautiful ways today.
So, if we imagined our connectivity, say I'm here, mm-hmm. and this is me.
Yes.
So this image helps us to sort of, okay, I'm aware of this little knot or this node of awareness here in the web in this particular place, but notice how I'm connected.
And just as a side to that, you know, I think back in family therapy and different things like that, they often use the example of a mobile. And if you ding any one part of that mobile,
good,
you set
image.
The whole thing in motion.
Good,
you know,
image.
And, you know,
good image. Great image. Great image. Pass the wand, please. Oh, David's got it.
So what Diana said, and Julian of Norwich, all shall be well.
Yeah.
Well, there's so much wisdom that's been shared, and I appreciate all of it. For me, I think it's staying in the present moment. If I can just stay in the present moment, then all is well.
Well, my old age and my, besides, it's brought me some good things besides a bad hip or bad knees or whatever. But in understanding relationships amongst people, I've recently had some experiences, and I was thinking, oh, it's because I've had so many experiences in the world that I can understand this so much better than I would have when I was 20 or 30 or something like that.
Yeah. Having tromped across South India and Ethiopia with Alicia, I really appreciate that. And there's, most of us have had that experience and that benefit. We have to sit.
So the thing that came to my mind was the power of compassion.
Mm. So can you flesh that out just a tad?
Well, with my fundamentalist background, I come up with chapter 8 in Romans, where it defines condemnation and judgment, and that compassion is the absence of that with God, condemnation is an actuality. that if we judge or say, or if God says something, that it is, and that the compassion is the allowing that we are not to judge, and we are not judgment, we are not condemnation, but it's all open.
All open. Somebody else want the stick? Herman wants it.
One of the principles that I use is, and that is, that love is the only force that transforms. I just had the experience of using that principle the other day.
Can you tell us?
Yeah, I had an audit from the tax office. and something came to me to love this man. And it sort of like dissolved everything. He saw absolutely nothing wrong. And I said, wow. Because I was genuinely loving him.
Yes.
You know, to have to do that all day long.
Oh, I know. Yeah, he probably gets the exact opposite.
Right. Of course he does.
And it transformed the relationship.
Yeah. And there was a human being to whom you were connected through life.
Connected completely.
Yeah. Perfect. Jesus.
Well, when you suggested this, I immediately wrote down 8 things, you know.
Of course. The Enneagram was number 1.
And I looked back at them, and they're all kind of intellectual. And so I've decided I'm going to give every person on earth and live by, and live out by them somehow, is an image instead of words. So it's the I Ching, you know, the yin and the yang, but 3-dimensional so that they can see the black and the white coming out of the white and the black. And holographically so that they can see their little part and everybody else's little part of the whole yin-yang.
Good.
That's good. Yin-yang coming out.
And that's speaking out of, you know, having lived on the planet, knowing that those are always in relationship. You know that.
I don't want to be sick, I just want to say something.
I know. I know you will. It hurts. You did the last one. when you were pointing out the nodes on the man's on the image there, the person's image, and we were talking about disease earlier, and disease is basically stagnant energy. And so if I am a node, that I'm being stagnant, I'm not growing and I'm not moving, then I'm creating disease in the anthropos as well.
Yeah.
It's a great point.
I like it.
Great point. So dynamic equilibrium is the basis of good health, right? Because the corpus of the being is in multiple dynamic changes in equilibrium, and to solidify it at one point and not let it be dynamic is to kill it.
And that makes me think, you know, I've just been, the word contemplation has just been eating me alive for the last few years. And, you know, our message negative images of our bodies in our particular culture. And to me, if the spirit's with the body, if you're alive, you are. The potential is infinite there. You are contemplating. If you are in flesh, if you're a warm soul, you are contemplating. Mm-hmm. Whether you know who you are or not, or whether you're giving a lot of energy or not. And if we thought of ourselves as temples housing a spirit, that what a different, how differently we would care for ourselves and each other.
That's right.
You know, and that's, I think that's, probably, I certainly missed it. That's probably embedded in a lot of our past that I've studied, and I dare say if it is, it certainly went over in my head, that intimate perspective.
So This is reflecting what Jenny and Herman said.
Yes.
And it's been said now more.
So many ways.
Where you accept that inner spark.
Yes.
Deep within the good in every, and you act on it in such a way that it brings it to life.
Yeah.
And it fans the flame of it. Yeah, it just fans the flame of it. And it's just, you go, wow.
So our furry friend just reminded me of this one. Knock and the door shall be open.
No, it won't.
No. Take the stick.
Eventually.
The door will not be open. Furry friend. Carol.
So, Nancy said, peace on earth begins with me. That made me think about that little song that I love, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. But then someone mentioned kindness, and I think the thing that we lack more than anything really is kindness toward ourselves.
Oh yes.
And so we start by being kind and gentle and peaceful within ourselves, to ourselves, and from there the compassion for, then we can do what Herman did.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it starts with smaller acts of kindness that don't get their little seed grains of possibility, but then it grows perfect. We can have the stick handy at any moment. I want to read you what I would take to the bank.
The poem is from the week today. Is that available somewhere?
I only have it, and for a price, I might give it to you. Yeah. It was sent to me by Diane Walker, and I think I have it electronically. Sure, I received it that way, and I'd be happy to send it to you. Those who are lowly of spirit live in a state of blessedness. For out of their very being, the rain of the heavens arrives. All those sorrowing in grief are also blessed, for they are calling out for the comforting. And blessed are the gentle and the kind, for they are the true heirs of this earth. And blessed are all those who are hungering and thirsting to be in right relationship, for they shall be fed to overflowing. Those who live with compassion know blessedness, for they shall be embraced by mercy. Those who possess clarity of heart shall know this blessing. God will be revealed to them. Blessed are those who create peace. They shall be called the offspring of God. And blessed are the ones who, for the sake of right relatedness, are stalked and even persecuted. For out of them comes the kingdom of the heavens. You also will know blessedness when, on my behalf, you are pursued, perhaps persecuted, and falsely charged with evil. Celebrate this with joy, because you will be richly rewarded. For the prophets, the shamans, were treated like this before you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
You can take that to the bank.
Right.
So, in this veil of soul making, right down here, those statements from our master are absolute gold. There's nothing about them that does anything less than absolute, authentic, pure gold. They're wisdom treasure. And the word blessed means to live in a state of messianic consciousness. Makarios. Those who live this way live in that state. Okay? Live in, the word bliss comes to mind, blessedness. Bliss is on the eastern side of the tree of sacred tradition. So the idea of bliss, sit, chat, ananda, in the Hindu world, being that state of blessedness, the state of bliss. So this diagram, which comes from perennial wisdom, I think you can take to the bank. I think that this understanding, which is what we're building so much of our discussion on, is in fact the large matrix of understanding and vision that puts my life as I walk through the six directions of this veil called duality, that gives it perspective. Without this larger perspective, I lose my way. It's easy to lose your way. And once this image of the journey of eternal return that Joseph Campbell talked about, that Mircea Eliade talked about, that said, okay, all the great stories of the earth are trying to tell us this one tale, because we're all going through it. It basically says we have our origin in a source beyond ourselves, and we are sent out of this source of our origin, and the angel of our being, you can see behind, we're sent down into the veil of soul making, and we arrive a little bleary, not sure why we're here, and gradually we wake up to our, the word is destiny, or telos, what it is that we have been created for. And once that is in our heart, we become shamanic, we become wise beings, we become capable of doing what Herman did this week. Only someone that has that inside and lives inside the heart could actually do that. It's a very trickster thing you did. To take, you know, an enemy and turn the person into an ally. That's a wonderful thing to do. And so this is that work, and it came out of wisdom understandings that I just quoted from. That is all part of the pearl of formation. And that will be delivered to the full form of humanity. This is not the collective unconscious. That's down here. Right here. Things to work. Almost full up, quite. And so, notice the human form, the great anthropos, the great sacred collectivity of human. We will offer our own to that. It will strengthen it. It will be the unique contribution that we make to this full form. And we will deliver it in our return. So we have forgotten this. We're getting hints of this. In the meantime, we are walking through that. And that's why we need wisdom. Because it's so easy to lose your way. And better technology won't help you find your way. It might make it possible for you to survive in the veil. But it will not actually get you into the big picture. Yes?
Would it be fair to say that line doesn't go from our creation straight to Flatland, that it implies journeys all the way down and journeys
all the way up. Back. That's Kabbalah. I told Ron that this morning when he woke up. Said, would you bring this up?
Bring that pearl.
I was coaching him.
Yes.
Yes.
And so, yes, this is too simple a diagram. And that's why Kabbalah is really interesting, because Kabbalah complicates the downward arc and the upward arc, or makes it more interesting. So we'll look at that separately. But if I could
help every single human soul on the planet to understand this, I would be very happy. I would be very happy.
What's your, we talked about helping or becoming or finding that path around the second part of the arc. I mean, that's, what's the metaphor for not finding that path?
Or not awakening while you're going through this. Okay, so can you go through the veil of soul making? Actually, there is a pearl in formation, but you didn't know it. And then you die, and all of the veils are stripped away. That clearly is what near-death experience is about. Because you keep getting hints of it. Oh, as soon as you leave the veil of soul-making, every veil is stripped away, and you see your own life, you see it in relationship to everything else, and then becomes clear what has been happening. And I would say that every person has pearl formation having started, and it's in a certain part of the process. So you say, oh, look, pearl was formed. Didn't even know it. So the question is, what is this return? I lost a friend 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Some of you met and knew. His name was Joe, Hispanic. And Joe lived at our place. He and Letty lived at our place. But Joe got killed. And I've been tracking Joe. And I think Joe is—he's really learning a lot of things, and I can feel the learning process. I don't know if Joe's coming back or not. I have no opinion. But I think that this arc here of coming down is really beautiful and complex. And the arc of return is beautiful and complex. So I think that's happening. Do you want the stick?
No, I want your stick.
Okay.
I don't want your stick.
Is it possible, because this just came to me, because I, you know, knowing Joe, but and he's not the type of person I'm talking about, but for those that we see, they're incarnated on this earth, and you're like, okay, there's a lot of evil here that we see as evil. Is that possible for the arc down not to have been something that was voluntary, or that they're here because they don't really want to be? Or what's that about?
We don't know. And
the answer I wanted.
I know. And I don't know if we can figure it all out. And maybe the whole point of it is that it was their process.
It was what?
Their process. Oh. I can't judge what the effect would be. But it would definitely have effect on the soul. The soul would be formed. So I know Joe, you know, really well. I know Joe, just almost everything about his life story. And I get the way he was. He was a Jekyll and a Hyde. And he was, the two were living inside of his being. And he was a beautiful, interesting, fascinating, wonderful person to be with, and he could be a pain in the butt and just raise hell and create all kinds of destruction, including destroying himself. And the last thing he told me almost before he died was, "Then I've been on meth." Mm-hmm. Well, that's self-destructive stuff, you know. And I said, "Joe, you're worth more than meth." I couldn't talk him out of it, but he probably died under the influence of it. So there was this beautiful, just shining being, and there was this just self-destructive being, and the two were just like this, and they were fighting all the time. It was just constant. So that was his process.
But you know, I've worked with kids that are they're just unlovable from the time they're born, almost. And they're just, let's say they come to school.
They're five by the time they come to school. Guess how much of
this is going on. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But
it just amazes me that, and there have been very few that they're not any light in, but I've seen a couple of kids come through that are just, there's just, whatever light there was has been scorched.
Yeah.
And, the, and that's the point, is it has been. It's been, still
yeah,
there.
It's been, yeah. It's been, yeah. This, yeah. But the burning coal in Isaiah, I will not snuff out. You know, maybe the flame is not there anymore, mm-hmm. but the coal burns, the coal burns.
Yeah, right.
Maybe that.
What can you say to someone who is aware of the divine spark, but is absolutely convinced that they didn't want to be here in the first place? And now that they're here, they are going to go through the mechanics, but they still have that deep-seated feeling that they didn't want to be here in the first place. What could you say to someone like that?
I would explore this. I would say, I'm really interested in your sense of the world and your sense of your place in it. When did you start to feel that way? You know, when did you start to feel exiled or alien or separated? When? And can you think of any reason that started? I'd like to know that. I'd like to know what their fundamental premise is about life on the planet. John and I were talking during the break. I think the fundamental premise for almost every human being is I'm here to maximize pleasure and to minimize pain. And there's a lot of bullshit trying to diminish my pleasure, and I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
If that was their philosophical bent, then I would start with that and say, here's the formula that we almost all live by. Wonder if the formula's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been fed this propaganda. This is just actually very toxic because it won't allow us to benefit from the world. It will only put us at the center of everything and judge everything by, did it increase my pleasure and minimize my pain? If that's the philosophical premise that you're living by and I'm living by, there's an F word in here that, you know, that probably works. That's what's going to happen. And so I would explore it that way, you know, whether or not I got any, if a person was honest, maybe we would get to something. But I would explore those two things. So it might have been a horrible disappointment, and the disappointment then led to a way of viewing the world out of the lens of the disappointment. But then the question is, what led you to believe that ideal? And what was the ideal, and was the ideal fair for what the world is? Because if the world is duality, then it's not fair to say that the world should be fair. The duality is not fair. By definition, it's unfair. And then our awareness of fairness is a part of the divine consciousness that says, I'm here in the world to right the imbalance. I'm going to bring justice as opposed to injustice. And there's plenty of examples of injustice in the world because that's part of duality. But I am going to put my foot on the other scale. Who would make us do that? Something in here. What did I just do?
Okay, now I'm trying to take my image.
Yeah.
But I want to add words to, you know, for everybody in the world. And so how can I get it, Trister, where they can experience being in the suffering, the black, the pain, and then experience into the white and swirls and dark, and that they're part of this bigger whole. Because everybody struggles with suffering and evil and pain, and so how can I transfer to them that awareness that they're part of that, and it's going to change, and it's going to be, you see what I'm trying to imagine? What I want to transmit to them has to involve their realizing it in their experience.
I guess I would answer that it's evolutionary. At the right moment, if you're there at the right moment, you will be catalytic. If you try to force that point of view before they're ready for it, it will not happen, and you know, the resistance. And so the question is, being ready at the right moment for certain people, maybe I can be catalytic.
I think
maybe
it happened with me and one therapist. I think I may have told y'all, you know, I've tried all my life to be perfect.
Well,
perfection,
you're not, sweet Dutch.
I'm perfectly imperfect. But anyway, she finally said, what about balance and harmony?
That's good.
And so that...
That changed the equation. Yeah, changed the equation.
Get yin and yang, and that good and evil and pain and pleasure.
So, see, you came to a wisdom stance. It took you a long time.
I was ready to hear that.
Yeah, you came to a wisdom stance, and you were ready to hear it. Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things that may be missing from our conversation is that the way Herman approached the man that he... seduced, if you will. But it wasn't done rationally.
No.
It was done with his heart. So he didn't have a conversation with the person. He said that he loved the person. Mm-hmm. He related through his heart with that person.
That's God talking to you.
But what's powerful to me is that it's about a rational thought.
Yeah.
And Herman approached it through his heart. And we have other opportunities to approach in different ways. We aren't only, I mean, I think you've mentioned already, you know, that the rational is not going to be necessarily changed in a person. It's going to be their spirit or their heart or some other essence of them that you can to enter in through that sense of themselves rather than their intellect.
Yes, absolutely the case.
Living it.
Yeah, and it is an evolution. At that moment, they'll enter into a wider world. And the question is, how does that happen? How does that? And I have to keep the only laboratory I really only experienced is my own fully, and then I can watch other people in the evolution. So let me do this. I wanted to leave you in this section with some things. So this has been given out before, but you may have not been in one of the gatherings where it was done. Through the years, the way we went and carried the stick, when somebody had the stick and I heard what they were saying, I wanted to put it down. So I have 24, somebody holds the stick and says, this is what I know for sure, and I've collected 24 maxims. So it's just a little take home, and whatever you send some back that way, and send some back this way, send it down the row, and they're just wonderful. They're just astounding maxims. And I've used this one other time, but I thought it was a good time to bring it out again and to give it to you. Okay. So I think that's going to hold. I know we're going to be obsessed with it.
Until it falls.
I'm going to do this now individually because... And I punched the machine. It printed them not the way I wanted, but it printed it as two pages collated. So I want you to get it and not say, I didn't get the second page. So I'm going to hand it to you one by one, and I'll explain what they are in a minute.
No, just keep it. You hold.
Oh,
no, please keep them together.
This is the same thing.
No.
This is
you get it one at a time. Don't pass them out.
What? I saw one in the other room. I got my coconut juice.
What is your second page? What's practical?
Yeah, practical. They're all traditions.
Believe it or not.
Believe it or not.
Okay, so this is always the terrible thing.
Check and make sure Jones has the right pieces.
$7
a maximum?
$7?
Yeah. There's two
7 cylinders.
She needs
the illusion
one. Oh. So is this two pieces?
Yeah. She needs the freedom one.
She needs the freedom one.
She needs the freedom
one. Okay. Handy those. Okay, you got the maxims, the illusion, and freedom. Okay, there you go. So, let's take these two. The maxims are self-explanatory, double-sided, and I know this is very confusing for humans to get two pieces of paper. I tried it only, I've learned this. I know, exactly.
Give me something to push against.
So, let's start with the seven pillars of practical wisdom. I was doing psychotherapy for many years, and I had to get to the bedrock of what is effective psychotherapeutic intervention. Okay. And I needed to understand where I was coming from. And these were seven principles that I worked with. So that, first of all, freedom to choose and freedom of choice. Every human being has a limited but significant possibility of making free decisions. You assume that every human being could take a step in the direction of a choice that would be different from what they were doing. What would be important is to frame where they are so that they could see what it was, what the pattern was like that they were living in. So pattern recognition is something that is significant in any kind of psychotherapeutic work or psychospiritual work. To change the pattern is to move in the direction of freedom. To realize what the context for the pattern is also important, because if you say you have an addictive personality and you fall into addiction easily, that's the pattern. And the context is, what is setting you up for that? I'm just using an example. What sets that pattern into place makes it easy for you to fall into addictive patterning. So the context might be really important to say, you know, what's really interesting here is that I'm just picking something out of the air. I've constantly been trying to prove to my father that I'm a good person. And that makes me fall into compulsive activity. Okay, just an example. So
this is a number four, a form of programming that I am triggered by certain events that are the result of the context in which I live that has created a pattern. So you understand how those relate. And the work of making a new choice is number five, changing the program. Saying, okay, let's, the moment you get trapped by I've got to please my father, you might say, no, I'm not on the planet anymore to please my father. That is a reprogramming idea. No, I'm not. My father's not the template. He's not my mother. And I'm not going to try to displease my father, but that's not the program. I'm going to tell myself something different. And I'm going to rely on number six to help me in the reprogramming. And for us, that would be a spiritual axis. You might not say that to a person, but here is a maxim that I want you to remember. That comes from the vertical axis. And then seven is, I want you to come next week and tell me what happened. Meaning, I want you to build this into your own experience and then tell me what the struggle was as you did that. So I'm believing that there is a free choice that you can make. You can recognize the pattern. You can see what created the pattern. You can understand what triggers and mechanisms that you've been programmed to do. You can reprogram by using a certain new input, and that comes from a great reservoir, number six, and now take that home and work with it. Okay, this is what I would call the seven steps of good therapeutic practice. That, and when Kent was saying that here's this person, if I sat with this person and that was the right context, I would probably go through this, not with this showing, but I would think about these things. These would be the things I would think about. So as sages, these are things we need to think about. Because we're dealing with people that are bound up and they think they're not free. Or they think they're free and in fact they're bound up. So either one of those two. So any question, I'm just quickly explaining this.
Well, I think it's highly important that it's in this order. Because we, being free to make a choice doesn't mean that you're going to always do the...
Yeah, you're not going to do it because you don't recognize
to us
the
and we choose how to react to it.
Right.
It's a choice. And it's maybe you're not... But it's interesting because I think this is really powerful because I think it takes from your initial choice. Like, for example, you choose to let someone else be responsible for your not developing the way you were developed.
That's right.
And then you go through this entire set until you finally get to the point of something causes you, maybe your futility or you can't blame someone forever.
Right.
And you reprogram.
Yes, right. And that's a reprogramming step.
And I've been through this absolute identical thing with my father.
Okay, good.
Just perfect.
Wonderful.
And it took me a time of almost 70 years old before I reprogrammed.
Okay, see, what a wonderful statement.
Just powerful.
It'd be great for you to, if you're willing, to write that up and say, okay, I'm a case study. Here's my case study. I am my own case study.
Wonderful.
And as this is how I achieved a stage of wisdom. This is what I would call standard psychotherapeutic technique that creates a wisdom stance.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to end in number seven. Okay, I worked on this, I was challenged by this, I fell down, I stood up, until I gained my feet.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is no longer bothering me. So that I wanted you to see that. Okay, good. So, you should have this in your bag. This should be in your bag of understanding, your tricks, what you carry around, what you want to work with, in addition to this. So, these are fundamental premises that are drawn from Sophia Perennis, perennial wisdom. Meaning, if you looked at the sacred traditions around the world, they would speak in one way or another about these seven principles. Just to use the word Maya, number one, you've heard that, right? Mm-hmm. That we live in a world of Maya. And Maya is built up through television. There's just so much Maya on television. If you buy this product, you will be handsome and beautiful and live forever, and the girls will flock around you, and this and that. It's Maya. It's Maya.
Is Maya the same thing for lie?
Pretty much. No, it's an illusion. Pretty much. So then, the uncertainty principle. There's a lot of what we want is certainty, and we want it pinned down, and that's part of the problem with of Trumpism, is that people are wanting certainty when in fact there's a lot of uncertainty, and that creates fear. But duality creates uncertainty. And then it's a laboratory in which we operate, and the soul is being formed and informed as a kind of working lab. So that brings up the discussion about alchemy, which will be next time we gather. So alchemy is how to work with the energies of the world as a kind of lab in an alchemical form, because alchemy is about soul formation. Turning lead into gold has nothing to do with metal. The instrument in this lab is your own process. And you are being guided, number five. You're not alone. There is some supreme agent, and one of you said it this morning just so forcefully. Maybe it was back in this general area. That there was an agency, active agency. Was that you, Sally?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, when you had the stick. So say it again.
That spirit is actively working in my life to teach me.
Yeah, exactly. So that's number five. It's a really strong, and if a person can start working with that as a principle in perennial wisdom, they will have access to all kinds of wisdom up and down the vertical axis. And then across the landscape of the desert of space-time, there are oases, and this is one. And the reason we keep coming back is because we keep drawing from the fact that we gather together on this weekend as a kind of oasis, sharing our personal wealth, sharing our experience, sharing our treasure, and so forth. And then what is the treasure and what is the pearl of great price? And the very last words in number seven, there's treasure that we are actually creating, and there is a pearl that is being formed. And the two, we came with treasure, we're creating treasure, we're sending treasure homeward even before we get home. We're banking treasure. And Jesus said, you're banking treasure. Did you know you're banking treasure? All the time you're walking through the veil, you're banking treasure, you're banking treasure, you're banking treasure. We are. And how to describe it are these wisdom, virtue, and freedom. So freedom relates to the first one. So the seven processes of freedom might be the first one. And then the creation of virtue is the pearl, and the wisdom is the what we garner from this whole long experience. So these are working principles. These are sort of in our bag. Wisdom teachers, wisdom seekers need these and to reflect on them, to meditate on them, to think about them. Okay, I'm going to work with illusion. I'm going to work with uncertainty. I'm going to work laboratory. I'm going to use instruments in the laboratory, tarot, alchemy, Kabbalah. I'm looking for guidance from higher sources. I am meeting with my colleagues in oases, and together we are garnering treasure and building the pearl.
Okay.